Welcome to the Settle Cane Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Smith, broadcasting from the Aorta of America, beautiful festival city, Oshkosh, Wisconsin, where we pump out reason and pierce through the propaganda. Here we go. Today is Sunday, April 23rd, 2023, and this is episode 49 of the Subtle Cane Podcast, Synchronicity, Part 1. If you're new to the Subtle Cane Podcast, thank you for gracing us with your virtual presence. If you're a returning listener, thank you for your continued support. It is much appreciated. In the introduction to this show, I say, and pierce through the propaganda. I thought it apt to revisit the topic of propaganda. In episode 6, Come On Baby, Light My Torch, I shared some of the techniques of propaganda and gave a short little bio of Eddie Bernays, a prominent figure who played a major role in the development of many of the techniques employed by propagandists. They often call themselves public relations experts or advertising executives. Many others think of themselves as influencers or advocates. We've so many creative shades of lipstick for the pig being the propaganda, not the people. I figured that it would be prudent to refresh, but I also wanted to flesh out the definition of propaganda from a slightly different angle. I encourage you to go back and listen to episode 6. In the off chance that you may not do so, I will run through 7 very common techniques that you will likely readily recognize. Pay special attention to ads and political campaigns and news stories and articles that you see after this and see if you can't pick out the mechanism. If you find a particularly good example, feel free to email me at subtlecane@protonmail.com. That's subtlecane@protonmail.com, and perhaps I'll sort of start a catalog for reference. I can use all the help you're willing to give, and that's definitely a value-for-value contribution. Now remember, propaganda is used to confuse people and to get them to believe something without even realizing it. It's a form of manipulation that works subversively to alter one's decisions without their knowledge. Here are those 7 common techniques. Number 1, bandwagon propaganda. This is a technique that relies on creating a sense of sort of the in crowd, the everyone's doing it of propaganda. Most of us have an innate desire to fit in. We do. To feel like you're complying with social norms, it's a strong motivator. Think of how many times we've seen this play out over the last few years with the intense resistance to deviations from the ever-shifting paradigms we're presented with. That was number 1, bandwagon propaganda. Number 2, card stacking propaganda. And this technique focuses on drawing attention to the positive aspects of an issue or a product and downplaying or avoiding the negative aspects. And can anyone deny this happened with the safe and effective mantra and the blind eye to adverse events when discussing the COVID vaccines? Now, regardless of anyone's personal convictions about taking or abstaining from said vaccines, this was blatantly used to coerce the public. That's number 2, card stacking propaganda. Number 3, plain folks propaganda. And this technique uses ordinary people, we'll say, to sell the agenda or product. The idea is to nurture a feeling of camaraderie with the proponent of whatever they're selling. To that I say, hello, social media influencers. Of course, with plain folks, there's always a nudge campaign that gets to tag along on the back. That's more akin to shifting the Overton window. But that's another topic altogether. If you're interested, see episode 28, Castles Made of Sand, for a more in-depth description of the Overton window. That's number 3, plain folks propaganda. Number 4, testimonial propaganda. So you take a trusted role or personality and you shuffle them out to endorse a product or a narrative, and you've got yourself a great tool for moving minds. Sometimes all you need is a lab coat and a stethoscope, and you can gain immediate authority. We saw that specifically with the Milgram experiment. You can also get some of these lunatics in Hollywood, of course, to endorse just about anything. So think Fauci pushing Big Pharma or Nicole Kidman eating bugs, and you're starting to get the picture. That's number 4, testimonial propaganda. Moving on, number 5, glittering generalities propaganda. Now, this one uses hyperbole and metaphors to induce a false sense of reward from the product or agenda. The key is to generate a feeling of euphoria that falsely ascribes that euphoria to whatever is being proposed or sold. Now, do any of us really believe that taking a new allergy pill will have us skipping through the daisies, or perhaps that voting for candidate A will make culturally diverse people dance together in slow motion? I think not. That's number 5, glittering generalities propaganda. Number 6, name-calling propaganda. And this is the proverbial mudslinging seen in politics. If you vote for so-and-so, you want rapists running the streets, or you endorse hate crimes, whatever those are. I always figured crime was crime, but what do I know? It often uses a false equivocation to say, if you like such-and-such, then you are a so-and-so. That's number 6, name-calling propaganda. And finally, 7, transfer propaganda. And Saul Alinsky famously advocated for this technique in his book, Rules for Radicals. Essentially, whatever you're actually doing that would be frowned on, accuse your competition or opposition of doing it, loudly and often. Number 7, transfer propaganda. So, there. That's a pretty long-winded summary of information I've already shared in the past, but it's a good refresher. Good refresher for me, too. Now I'd like to move forward into another perspective on the matter. If you remember, I spoke with Andrew Hoffman in episode 45, and he suggested a couple of books to me. The name of the author of those books is Jacques Ellul. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. He wrote like 50 books. I'm working my way through 2 of them now. The Technological Society and Propaganda, the Formation of Men's Attitudes. It will be no surprise that you and I will be focusing on the latter today, though the former was written earlier, and it does lay some groundwork that can be helpful should you decide to read them for yourselves, which I highly encourage. The International Jacques Ellul Society has a website, ellul.org. I thought an appropriate place to gather some background information on the man. In the short bio section of the page, I found this interesting. This opening statement was, Jacques Ellul adhered to the maxim, think globally, act locally, throughout his life. I don't know about you, but that sounds like good advice. It behooves us to think about the big picture while remaining focused on what is right in front of us and actionable. Jacques was a French philosopher and an academic, though he understood the dangers of becoming isolated in the ivory towers of academia, and he eloquently and tactfully promoted the need for critical thinking and action in the real world. There's a link in the show notes to the site for those of you interested. I'm not going to spend too much time on his life, as the information's not specifically pertinent to our purpose here, though may reference it a little bit, and I do suggest that you look at that website provided. The book was originally published in French in 1962 when Jacques was about 50 years old. It's a timeless assessment of the mechanisms of propaganda, and while he was not a scientist or a psychologist per se, it quite masterfully handles the material in a way that encompasses varying aspects of the topic. In it, there are many historical examples given to back up his rationale for arguments he makes. Some are quite dated at this point, but you know what they say about those who have forgotten history? They are doomed to... That's right, repeat it. So his choice to differentiate propaganda the way he did is historically relevant. But I also think that it helps us to see how and why certain techniques and mechanisms have evolved and how they've been integrated into society today, into modern society. Unfortunately, there has been a sort of globalization of the techniques at this point, and it seems that everyone has sort of learned from each other and incorporated different methods in a rather synchronous manner. Take that in the massive increase in reach and exposure, and you have what we call in the military a force multiplier. It's no longer just ads on TV or the radio and newspaper. The messaging is in our earbuds and on our screens in a way that is entirely without precedent in the long history of our species. Instead of a gently susurrating stream, we're standing with our mouths wide open in front of a fire hose. I think it is wise to ponder the lessons of the past within the context of the present. Elul identified some of the challenges we face when trying to study propaganda. He outlined three areas that cause difficulty in a real analysis of the material that I will share. The first, propaganda is often thought of pejoratively. In other words, it is almost always thought of as an evil. He says that in order to study anything properly, one must set aside ethical judgments. I can appreciate the desire to be as objective as possible, though I doubt any of us are truly capable of unmitigated objectivity. Just saying, it's certainly noble to pursue impartial inquiry, but we're humans, and bias is always present in one form or another. It's my piece on it. The second, propaganda is what he refers to as, quote, tall stories disseminated by means of lies. Now, propaganda does not need to be comprised of lies necessarily. It merely needs to present the facts in a way that obscure the motives and goals of those who present them. Statistics work brilliantly in this manner, as it's all about scale and data gathering techniques. I can find statistics to support any number of opposing views quite convincingly. They don't even have to be inaccurate, just properly couched. And then the third issue. Propaganda is difficult to define, or at the very least, it's difficult to get academics to settle on a specific definition. Elul goes into a rather exhaustive effort to define propaganda that would take much too long to cover here, but he's also got a narrow definition, and it goes like this. Quote, in propaganda, we find techniques of psychological influence combined with techniques of organization and the envelopment of people with the intention of sparking action. What he is mainly concerned with is the use of propaganda as a tool of governments over their citizens. And again, we have to remember that when Elul was writing this, the world was a very different place. And the advent of the internet has changed the landscape in spectacular and, in some cases, terrifying ways. The Smith-Mundt Act, signed in 2012, recognized this. Refer to episode 12, Road to Nowhere, for a quick summary of what that looked like. It's in the first several minutes of the episode for those interested, episode 12. Essentially, it recognizes that national borders no longer really exist for information in the age of the internet. So the American public is now pretty much fair game for propagandization. Did I pronounce that right? By the U.S. government, when it was previously illegal. Of course, that didn't stop the government from doing it before. It just made it much easier and much less restrained. Okay, short break here. The Subtle Cane podcast operates on the value for value system. And that means there's no ads. Not a single instance of those seven wonderful techniques that we covered at the outset of the episode. You will not be asked to talk to your doctor about symptoms, listen to any pitches for a new and improved diet pill, or vote for candidate A over candidate B. That's because I value your time and don't want to sell it to advertisers. Since you are here listening, you have shared that valuable time, and for that I am truly grateful. You can also share your talent or treasure, which I would also appreciate. Links are in the show notes for how to contribute financially. I'm in the process of setting up my Give, Send, Go campaign. Andrew Hoffman was extremely gracious, responded to my inquiry about it, so I'm feeling a little more confident about that, and it's coming soon. You can always email me at subtlecane@protonmail.com. That's subtlecane@protonmail.com. With any thoughts or content you wish to share. As of now, no producer donations to report just yet, but I did receive a request for $500 from some rando lady that I've never met. I'm not going to read too much into that. Back to the lesson at hand. Technological advancements have effectively coincided with large-scale globalization initiatives to blur the lines between borders. Our traditional understanding of independent nation-states acting out of self-promotion and preservation has been changed in no small way. Some of that change was organic and can be, I think, correctly attributed to a logical progression, undoubtedly. But there are also some very wealthy individuals and influential organizations which have pushed, prodded, and downright beaten the general population into accepting radical alterations to their perceptions of the world. And it's no secret that major financial players and intergovernmental agencies, as well as NGOs, non-governmental organizations, are openly advocating for global governance. Not a secret. One of the interesting aspects of how well propaganda has been utilized in this arena is the fact that there are cries for globalism on all major networks and from the mouths of our politicians and in our entertainment industry. But if you're talking to the average ostrich, they quickly revert to the tired neuro-linguistic programming they've dutifully received, and they'll call you a conspiracy theorist if you mention globalists. See, that's the beauty or horror of effective propaganda. You can show someone definitive examples that leave no room for equivocation, examples of people saying things outright or published articles written in no uncertain terms about a topic that has been deemed a conspiracy. And the propagandee will dutifully look at you like they have walleye vision. It can be quite frustrating for those of us who are really trying to sift and winnow through the evidence and use reason to draw logical conclusions. Matthias Desmet, the Belgian psychologist, has echoed Ellul, Hannah Arendt, and others about how the rational mind is subverted by propaganda and is almost impervious to facts that contradict the narrative that they have subscribed to. Now, confirmation bias affects all of us. We all have the tendency to be more receptive to information that affirms our beliefs and to deflect information that contradicts or challenges our perceptions. We all need to be on guard, actively searching ourselves for manifestations of this in our lives. Even so, we're going to fail at times. What is really frightening about propaganda is that by its very nature, it circumvents our conscious mind and implants ideas with the intent to inspire actions that we would not have otherwise taken. But that doesn't mean that it's hopeless, because understanding what propaganda looks like and examining the underlying motives of the people presenting us with information can go a really long way in helping us. Ellul says something that I think everyone should remember. It can be a really valuable tool against propaganda. He says this, quote, "Propaganda ceases where simple dialogue begins." Think about that. How powerful of a statement is that, and how succinct? Propaganda ceases where simple dialogue begins. I love it. So you stop and take a look around us. Free speech is being attacked on all sides. We dress censorship up as content moderation. You know, honestly, you can forget that. I mean, I'm seeing people openly advocating for censorship on the regular now. Just giving voice to an opinion that's not sanctioned can end a person's career or even land you in prison. And that's what our feckless president would say is no joke. More on that in coming episodes, I assure you. There are different ways to think about and classify propaganda that we'll be covering in part 2 and maybe 3 of this series. We're going to get into more about how the various forms and mechanisms that Ellul has identified have been synthesized due to the advancements in technology and the advent of things like social media. Or at least I'm going to make an argument for that hypothesis. In the movie Ray, about the life of famous musician Ray Charles, his mother says to him, "Scratch a lie, find a thief." And I love that line. For our purposes, I'm going to rephrase that as "scratch a narrative, find a propagandist." What I mean is that the thin veneer that covers an implanted narrative cannot tolerate any scrutiny. Propaganda cannot tolerate scrutiny. Not only are people unwilling to consider alternatives to the narratives they've adopted, they can't even tolerate hearing alternatives. I love that sci-fi movie from the 80s, They Live, with Roddy Piper. If you've never seen it, please do. And don't judge. I am a total nerd. I accept that. Anyway, in the movie, there are aliens that take over the planet, and they use their advanced technology to essentially propagandize humans into behaving the way they want and believing what they want. They broadcast a signal that blinds people to the reality of what's happening. And when that signal is interrupted, the humans under their hypnotic spells sort of feel discomfort and headaches and such. It's not quite enough to break the spell, but it's enough to harsh their buzz, to use some colloquial stoner terminology. And I think of that every time I'm having a conversation with someone on a topic that's deemed sacred by the prevailing trend, whatever it is, Ukraine, trans rights, climate, COVID, the list goes on. But I see a physical reaction on their faces. And it's uncanny. I mean, they look physically distressed by calm and considered conversation. And this is with people that are kind and empathetic and generally rational and open-minded. But you touch those certain nerves and, man, there's a noticeable shift in their posture and facial expressions. And that's what I mean by scratch a narrative, find a propagandist. Now, to be fair, I did say calm and considered conversation. I mean, you can't just start ranting about microchips in the mayonnaise or alien overlords impregnating the women folk. I mean, you have to be measured and rational, and you got to meet people where they are. You got to meet them where they are. I'm talking about calmly asking rhetorical questions regarding talking points that have been presented as facts. As Ellul suggests, quote, propaganda imposes a complete range of intuitive knowledge susceptible of only one interpretation, unique and one-sided, and precluding any divergence. Again, propaganda ceases where simple dialogue begins. Gotta interrupt the signal. What we're seeing more and more of now that concerns me is a mass of people who are not only passively resisting challenges to their beliefs by, like, changing the subject or ending discussions. We're seeing a huge uptick in violent reactions to any challenges. On campuses everywhere, and of course it often starts on campuses, there are violent protesters who shout down or threaten and even physically attack people who disagree with them. And this is not good, my friends. It's myopic, to say the least. What the mass fails to recognize is that tyranny is the bedmate of silenced dissent. Just like in the courtroom, it's all about precedent, man. They don't realize that the very sword that they wield could be turned on them in an instant. It's the complete antithesis of the golden rule. That is, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Censorship is like the ring of power, and no one can wield the ring of power without being corrupted by it. So that last part was just to top off the tank on my nerdometer. So just to reinforce what I've been inadequately trying to convey, I'm going to read a short passage from Ellul's book. It's from page 11. Quote, not only does propaganda seek to invade the whole man, to lead him to adopt a mystical attitude and reach him through all possible channels, but more, it speaks to all men. Propaganda cannot be satisfied with partial successes, for it does not tolerate discussion. By its very nature, it excludes contradiction and discussion. It must produce quasi-unanimity, and the opposing faction must become negligible, or in any case, cease to be vocal. Scratch a narrative, find a propagandist. Going forward, we will be taking a closer look at some of the observations Ellul and others have made about the nature and mechanisms of propaganda. We will also, as I stated, be evaluating the hypothesis that there has been a virtual synchronization of the tools, methods, and forms of propaganda with the advent of the internet and social media. See episode 33, Eyes Without a Face, if you're so inclined. Some of the material that I covered in there from Jeremy Weissman's important book, The Crowdsourced Panopticon, may serve well as background information. I hope you know how much I appreciate all of you and how much it means to me that you share some of your valuable time with me. And I hope you understand how seriously I take any trust you may invest in the words I say or the information that I share. It is truly, truly an honor and a privilege. I end with this thought. It isn't our job to change people's minds or dismantle the system necessarily. And to torture my they live analogy, we don't need to overthrow our alien overlords. Maybe it's enough just to interrupt the signal. For all you listening, you are valued. you are loved, and yes, you are worthy. God bless, and good night.
Back once the fire's lit, let the embers glow and be done with it. I'm startled by my lack of fear as the world I love turns to ashes here. And the dancing